Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic, no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
Nerd Clan, guess what? This episode of the Potterverse is brought to you by Minute with Mary, and you need a little bit more me time. I know I sure do. And sometimes the best me time can be involving taking care of your skin. You know, this is the one body, the one face that we have. And sometimes when you just dive in and take care of that face of yours, whether it's skincare or sleep, you're going to thank yourself. You're going to thank yourself so much. The next time you pass yourself in a mirror, you may chortle like, I don't know, Gilderoy Lockhart. Listen, if you don't do that right now, if instead you look at yourself and it looks like, you know, you were hanging out with that banshee.
Free of charge.
Free of charge, yes. I can hook you up. I can hook you up with some actually tips and tricks free of charge by going to MinuteWithMary.com. And if you're on Facebook, search the hashtag MinuteWithMary and request to join my marvelous VIPs free of charge. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners, and let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. How's it going? My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake. And if anything was ever that I own covered in toilet water, that's it. Throwing it away.
Really?
I don't care. It could be my iPhone. It could be my house. If it's covered in toilet water, out.
Okay.
I'm not touching it. Oh. I know it's the same exact water, but when it touches the toilet, it touches that bowl. Man, I don't know what's living in that thing. It could be could be all kinds of organisms that I don't know.
Yeah.
So especially when it's a diary. If it's just sitting in there, paper's soaking up all that stuff.
Well, it didn't soak it up.
Well, you know what I mean. Whatevs. It was around it. Things can jump on it. I don't know what's in there.
Listen.
I'm out. I'm out on toilet water paper.
You know what won't be able to affect that diary? COVID.
That's true.
Repel that. Yeah. That's all we need. That's what we need.
So you're saying we need Tom Riddle's?
We need a Horcrux. Yeah. We need a Horcrux to get through this. Oh my goodness.
Bam. A winner. Absolutely.
Which
good
Horcrux
job.
Is your favorite Horcrux?
Oh, I think the necklace.
Oh.
I think the necklace.
That's so Slytherin of you.
Yeah, it is very Slytherin of me.
So Slytherin of you. Okay, so here we are. We are chatting about the very secret diary. And I'm just going to ignore the fact that I have pulled things out of a toilet.
Mm-hmm. Yep, go ahead.
You're welcome, Blake.
I don't even want to know. Because okay. Because I'll throw your hands away. That's it.
Harry couldn't explain, even to himself, why he didn't just throw Riddle's diary away. The fact that even though he knew the diary was blank, he kept absentmindedly picking it up and turning the pages as though it were a story he wanted to finish. And while Harry was sure he had never heard the name T.M. Riddle before, it seemed to mean something to him. Almost as though Riddle was a friend he had when he was very small and had half forgotten. But this was absurd. He'd never had friends before Hogwarts. Dudley had made sure of that.
Before we continue, yes. Mo says on Facebook a very, very special thing. Harry is her favorite Horcrux.
Well done.
Well done, miss. Well done.
Yes.
Excellent stuff.
I dig it.
That is an excellent choice, Mary, to read. That was probably what I would have written. Read, not written.
That's
read.
What makes it excellent.
Free of charge. I probably would have read that as well, because I think that is the absolute crux. Pardon the pun. It is the absolute crux of this chapter.
The absolute horcrux.
And I think it is perfectly on point with what we are going to be discussing quite a bit today, as a matter of fact.
I concur.
If I have any say in what we're doing today, I think that's what we're going to be talking about.
Now, listen, everybody. We're about to get this Potter Potty started. But just in case you couldn't get enough, Mary and Blake, we've got a load of other podcasts for you to check out. And we have to make sure that you know about our This Is Us podcast. It's called This Is Us 2, because This Is Us starts back up on NBC later this month. We're so excited. We actually were talking with one of the editors today about how the process is going and how excited we are for everything. So just know that we've got a slew of other podcasts, whether it's Game of Thrones, Gilmore Girls, Outlander, This Is Us 2, This Is Us, I mean, The Leftovers. We've got a ton of them. You can head on over to maryandblake.com. The Crown podcast that we have is going to be starting back up as well. And that is available for people at jointhenerdclan.com. That is our like super special community of people who really, really extra appreciate the work that we do here. So if we are bringing you Lumos in the time of Knox, if we are bringing smiles to your faces, if you are listening to our podcast on your ride to work, or maybe you're joining us live, please, please think about contributing at jointhenerdclan.com. For as little as $2 a month, you make a huge difference to keep this media company going. On that note, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Oh, Blake. So you liked this chapter, eh?
I loved this chapter.
Yeah, a lot of cool things happened.
I mean, there's some stuff that's, you know, whatevs, but I'm in on this chapter.
So what happens in this chapter is, of course, Myrtle's toilet floods, pew, splash, and Tom Riddle's diary is found in there. And Harry, like me, don't care if it's in toilet water. We're going to scoop that thing right on up. There's a Valentine's Day party put on by none other than Gilderoy Lockhart.
Free of charge.
Free of charge, free of charge. And then Harry finds out that this diary is super secret special, and he gets transported back in time through the diary and finds out that none other than Rubeus Hagrid was the one that opened the Chamber of Secrets.
Yes. Another fantastic red herring, by the way, in this book.
Red herrings would be everywhere.
Everywhere in this book. And that is another indication on why and how the author has certainly become more confident in her writing. Mm-hmm. She's, I mean, obviously she planned the whole book out prior to writing it. That is clear. But the fact is that she's able to put these things in here, and she's able to lead you down paths, yet still retain the truth of what actually happened within her structure.
Writing a story must be so hard.
I could not do it. I mean, I love critiquing them. I'm all about that life. But yeah, writing one, like, unless I'm probably like collaborating with somebody, I don't think I could do it.
I know. It's a lot. It's a lot to handle. So this, of course, happens between Christmas and Valentine's Day, which I just love in Harry Potter books, how like major events are often wrapped around holidays. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, you want to be in that great hall. You want to be enjoying the festivities and doing all the fun things. So let's just take a moment.
Actually, I do want to take one moment before we continue.
Yeah.
Kristen here on Facebook says, longtime listener who rarely gets to watch live, wanted to mention, though, that she met a guy who hadn't read Harry Potter. I told him that just wouldn't work. So he's just started reading The Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, nice job.
It sounds like somebody I know.
Sounds like me. I was like, this is a make or break.
She told me that. She said, no, you're nice and all that, like, you're great, but if you haven't read Harry Potter, that's it.
Yep.
We ain't doing this.
True story.
That is a very true story. All right, so continue, my darling.
Oh no, I mean, I'm pulling up my notes. I actually took notes today through my Apple Watch. I was like, hey Siri, remind me that Ron had knowledge of bad books.
Nerd!
Hey Siri. Oh, she's listening again. How did Malfoy know that the Valentine was from Ginny?
Yeah, good one. Good
I
one.
Know.
All good stuff.
Okay, so right, let's
where do you want to begin?
I just want to have fun. Let's have a joyous moment.
Right, can we talk about then? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I you're right. You're right. Go ahead. No, you're right.
Valentine's Day.
Okay.
I just thought you would like it because it's a little lighthearted and it's your BFF. Your two BFFs from this universe are in the Valentine's Day party area. I just thought it would be fun for us to like chill in that for a moment. That Gilderoy Lockhart noticed that people were a wee bit glum,
yes,
you know, because kids are pretty much dying. He puts on a Valentine's Day party and thanks, what, the 49 people who've already sent him a Valentine's Day card?
And of course, he's the one who thinks, well, I mean, obviously, everything that I've done has stopped the attacks. Let's just raise everybody's fun and spirits by throwing a Valentine's Day party. I mean, like, How Gilderoy Lockhart is that? And again, that just goes to show you the kind of writing that the author is doing. The fact that you could say something along the lines of how Gilderoy Lockhart is that, of him throwing a Valentine's Day party, is a perfect example of character over plot. And she has created a fantastic character in Lockhart. And also, I would argue later on in this chapter, Tom Riddle.
Mm.
Tom Riddle has some great stuff about him that we will get to in a little bit. Though, I must say, Hermione is, she's got some problems.
Like, she's half cat.
That's
still
what I'm saying.
Like, and she's been there for weeks.
Yeah, she's there for like the better part of a month, right?
2 months. We're now on Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's
Day.
Right. Good point. Yeah, 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, that means she's missed.
Yeah, a month and a half.
She's missed a month and a half worth of class.
I mean, she hasn't missed it because the boys have been going there every single day after class to bring her her work. But she is excited to get back in action.
Well, but we all know what happens to her after this. And that is, again, for the better part of the rest of the semester. So is she like JFF? Are they going to have to like redo all this work?
What's JFF?
Justin Finch Fletchley?
Oh, already forgot about him.
Or Colin Creevy?
Yeah. Like, where's...
Oh, wow, you already forgot about a Hufflepuff. You know
where's
what?
Where's his mention?
Just like that. A winner!
Where is his mention when we're talking about the hospital room? Like, poor Justin. Where are you? Because Hermione got the claw draped around her, but you still have Colin and Justin and nearly had the snick.
Yep.
Do they get hungry? We just don't know.
We don't know.
They're just chilling there with Miss Norris. Like, are they put in a closet, a broom closet? I don't know where they're
and
put during
about,
this time.
How about the fact that the mandrakes are growing and the author makes a point to tell you that they're growing? And not only are they growing, they start to resemble teenagers because they become secretive and they want to, like, just do nothing. And they're holding back.
And once
back.
Their acne clears up, then you can chop them up and boil them up for the potion. It's going to be great.
And it's great to show you that the life in the magical world takes a form of its own. And it continues to do that. We start with the Ka. The Ka seemed to take on a form of sentience itself. And now the life cycle of a mandrake is coming through and they're exhibiting the forms and the style of a teenage human. I just find that fascinating.
I know. Of course, Hermione is just smitten by Gilderoy Lockhart, though, as she's in the hospital wing and they're checking on her and she's got that little card, that get well card, mm-hmm. signed by Gilderoy with all of his accolades listed underneath. And what I loved about this is, you know, Ron's constantly after Hermione. You know, he even says, is Lockhart the smarmiest bloke you've ever met or what? As he and Harry are leaving. You know, he keeps poking fun of Hermione about Gilderoy. And mind you, Ron is spot on.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Gilderoy is a schmuck. Ron completely sees through it. But also, remember, they're 12. So I think that this is the beginning of the jealousy that Ron has, you know, for his feelings for Hermione.
Yeah.
Because Harry's not the one who's vocalizing this. Like, come on, Hermione. You really sleep with that under your pillow. It's Ron who notices.
I love how it's written to. To Miss Granger, wishing you a speedy recovery from your concerned teacher.
Yes.
Professor Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, third class. Honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League and 5 times winner of Witch Weekly's most charming smile award. Like, I love how the charming smile award has kept popping up throughout this book. It's something that he is wildly proud of. And again, another little factor into the characterization of this man,
mm-hmm.
something that you can glean information from. It's not something he does. It's not something that describes like his clothing. It's not his job. It is just a character trait of his that is phenomenal.
Agreed.
Phenomenal.
So as the boys are leaving the hospital wing, just gonna say Justin Fletchley.
Nobody cares
Filch,
about JFF.
Filch is, you know, grumbling because there's so much mopping to do, and the poor thing, of course, he's a squib, so he can't like bibbity boppity boo that away.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been mopping, and the boys run in to see what is the issue in Moaning Myrtle's bathroom, and she's so upset because someone threw a book through her head. So she just made a tidal wave of toilets come at everyone in the world. And inside, Harry finds this thin, small book. And it has a shabby black cover and it was just wet like everything else. And what I loved is, you know, how Ron was able to say, that books are dangerous. You know, because Harry's like picking it up and Ron's like, are you crazy? It could be dangerous. Dangerous, right. Harry says, laughing. Come off it. How could it be dangerous? You'd be surprised, said Ron, who was looking apprehensively at the book. Some of the books the ministry's confiscated, Dad's told me, there's one that burned your eyes out. And everyone who's read Sonnets of a Sorcerer spoke in limericks for the rest of their lives. And some old witch in Bath had a book that you could never stop reading. You had to wander around like Belle from Beauty and the Beast with your nose in it, trying to do everything one-handed. And what I love about this,
I think you've had that book actually, Mary. Oh no, that was Twilight. Never mind. Sorry.
So what I love about this is Ron once again is filling us in the Wizarding World. Ron, who just gets such the shaft when it comes to the movies, is being dimwitted. You know, here he is. He has knowledge. His dad has even told him he found these scary books. Ron is right about this book. Ron is right about this book. His dad Absolutely. Probably confiscated some bad books, even from Draco Malfoy's house, from Lucius Malfoy. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those books that Lucius was able to give away, to send back to the school. Mm-hmm. This is another example of how Harry should have listened to Ron.
And not only should he have listened to Ron because it could have been dangerous, the reasoning that Ron gives for it potentially being dangerous is even better. He says it could have been anything, said Ron. Maybe he got 30 OWLs or saved a teacher from a giant squid. Maybe he murdered Myrtle. That would have done everyone a favor.
Now, for why he got the award? That's why he got the award.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Either way, I mean, this book is part of that. Mm-hmm. And I love how he holds Riddle accountable to that book and puts that into his fear of like, why this kid, you shouldn't be trusting this.
Yeah.
It could have been anything.
And how ironic that he says, maybe he murdered Myrtle.
Right. And again,
Ron,
more spot on writing, mm-hmm. and especially for this kind of story, a story that is a complete mystery from the jump, who and what has done this with the Chamber of Secrets. And it is pardon the phrase, but it is a riddle for everybody yes. to solve. And the author is immediately giving you, the reader, the answer right away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tom Riddle didn't necessarily kill Myrtle, but he did set free the basilisk, which did kill Myrtle.
Yeah, and then he made a horcrux out of her with right. his diary.
Right, exactly. So
two for one.
Yeah, exactly. So I just love that the author tells you the answer right away, and you as the reader have to parse that.
I mean, think about it. This is him like learning about how to use horcruxes and wants to eradicate the school from mudbloods. Mm-hmm. So he learns how to open the Chamber of Secrets and is able to not only get rid of essentially a mudblood, but also turn in a horcrux at the yep. same time. And might I add, this is the most brilliant of his horcruxes. It has his memory inside of it and has the ability to unlock the chamber yet again.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, an absolute brilliant, not just like this is a piece of my soul to take care of me if I were to get hurt,
right, no,
but like it serves a purpose.
It's interactive.
Yeah. It's a brilliant job, 16-year-old Tom Riddle.
And I also like here too that the mystery of what is happening with Harry is what pulls him. Harry couldn't explain, even to himself, why he didn't just throw Riddle's diary away. The fact was that even though he knew the diary was blank, he kept absent-mindedly picking it up and turning the pages as though it was a story he wanted to finish. And while Harry was sure he had never heard the name T.M. Riddle before, it still seemed to mean something to him, almost as though Riddle was a friend he'd had when he was very small and half forgotten. But this was absurd. He had never had friends before Hogwarts. Dudley had made sure of that. I love this notion, and this is going to be some real nerd talk, Mary.
Let's dive in.
You know what? I'll give you a preemptive.
Nerd!
Bring okay. it on.
As we know, Harry is a Horcrux.
Mm-hmm.
What are you telling me?
I didn't know if you wanted to switch the camera angles.
Oh, no, that's okay. Sorry. as we know, Harry is a Horcrux, right? And is the book like is Harry making a conscious decision just because he's curious, or is it like Horcrux to Horcrux?
I think
bro
it's Horcrux
language?
To Horcrux. Like, I've been with you since you were a baby. Like, you do know me since you were a child, since you were a baby. We are old friends, friend.
And if that's the case, then I feel like, and I've led you in this direction for a reason.
Okay.
I feel like when Harry does the Expelliarmus to Draco, when he has the diary in his hand and he's trying to get it away from Draco, don't you get the feeling that's a little bit of Frodo-esque, like getting angry at Samwise or getting angry at anybody? Like when Frodo was wearing the one ring to rule them all, the ring altered Frodo.
Yes.
Does the book alter Harry?
I don't think so. It's like, that's my stuff, man. Stop touching my stuff.
Yeah, but I think the characterization of Harry, as we've been talking a lot about that characterization for these characters within this chapter especially, what we've seen from Harry wouldn't necessarily demand that. I don't think Harry is one to
jump.
This
is the boy who
quickly
said, "Give it here, Malfoy, or knock you off your broom." I would disagree.
Yeah.
See, I think
maybe it's just Malfoy who does it to Harry.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because I don't think anybody else. I don't think Harry acts
like
that.
No, this is his arch nemesis. No, he is. He's had it. Yeah. Oh, he would completely. And the fact that he can do Expelliarmus on him. Thank you, Snape, for teaching him that spell. Like, Harry's super important spell of Expelliarmus. I love it. And I love that it's even mentioned here in the book. Like, just like how Snape had disarmed Lockhart, Harry did it to Malfoy. I do. I think that this is the Horcrux to Horcrux, and I think that, yes, Harry feels pulled to this book, but also it's Malfoy. Like, don't touch my stuff, man. I feel like he would have done it even if it was his quill.
I don't know about that.
Just to, like, do it to him in front of everybody. Listen, Harry's having a rough year. Everyone thinks that he's the heir to Slytherin, and he's questioning if he's the heir to Slytherin. Draco makes his life terrible. Puts down all of his friends. Yeah, I'm done with him. I would do that.
You would Expelliarmus him? The anger that he has.
I got angry at my nemesis in college and did something I'm not proud of. So, I don't know. I feel like I'm as true Gryffindor as it gets. I don't do it for everybody.
Yeah.
But one person just really got me revved up.
I don't know. It's in front of Percy. It's in front of the teachers.
I did it on TV.
That's true. That's a good point.
That's why I'm saying, like, I can see Harry doing this. When Harry makes oopsies like this, I sit there and I go, have I done something similar? Yes. Yes, I have. Not my proudest moment, but I have.
Victoria says, hate to bring up how hardcore the author ripped off Lord of the Rings, but yep, love them both. But do you agree with that assessment, Mary, that the author ripped off Lord of the Rings for a lot of their stuff?
I don't really feel that way. I feel like, I mean, you could probably say that to a lot of different things. The Lord of the Rings was an amazing book, an amazing series. But
you could say that I think she was maybe inspired by some of the stuff. In particular, I would
lean towards Game of Thrones, which, like, you know, George R. R. Martin has said that he's highly influenced by J.R.R. Tolkien. But I don't know. I don't feel that way for the Potter series. Personally, I don't.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough. Absolutely.
Okay. So, Valentine's Day.
Yes.
We'll just take a moment with the heart-shaped confetti falling down from the ceiling, and it doesn't disappear like the snow did at Christmas. The snow from the magical ceiling would melt or just disappear before it hit your plate. This sadly goes onto your plate, and Harry has to brush it off. And so there's a lot of things going around, and there's these dwarves that go around and they deliver Valentines. And this made me think about the Valentines they used to send you in school. So, Blake, I know that you went to a private Catholic high school.
Yes.
And I went through the public school system the entire time. I don't know about you, but the thing that we used to have is you could buy carnations for people.
Yes.
And this would be like a fundraiser for the school or for your class or whatever. And it would be like a carnation, and there'd just be this little stapled piece of paper with like who it was from or something. And different people would be going around delivering these carnations. Did they ever have anything more extreme than that at your school for a Valentine's Day experience?
No, no. The only thing that we had was the carnations. Like you could just, or if you, I think there was one year where they did like chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
But like you bought it from the school. Like we used to have a candy store in our school. It was run by the nuns in high school. And at lunch, it was open. And after lunch, you can go to the candy store and you can go buy whatever the heck you wanted. So I think it was the nuns who went out and bought a whole ton of Hershey's or whatever. And you could send candygrams or something to the people that you wanted. So that was probably the height of our Valentine's Day experience at school.
I know when I taught. So a couple of years ago, I was teaching. That's what my degree is in, music ed. And I was teaching and I was at a private school. And what I loved is that we made sure that every single child at least got one carnation. Mm-hmm. You know, because there are those kids, like the super popular kids get 50 million. So I'm actually quite surprised. Well, actually, Harry, everyone thinks he's the heir. I wonder if in latter years, if they were to do something like this, like say, I don't know, Harry's sixth year, how many he would get when everybody's going bananas for him. But he gets this dwarf coming around, singing to him, delivering this Valentine. Snape is completely insulted because Gildroy Lockhart's telling people to go ask him how to make love potions. Mm-hmm. And Flitwick is a sly old dog. Because he does entrancing enchantments. Like, I just think that this is a riot. Like, he is just going around calling out people like, oh, yes, Snape can make a love potion, which is, like, Snape's least favorite thing. And then he's calling Professor Flitwick, who is one of the most, if not the most respected. Like, I just feel like he's a very respected individual in this school community. Sure. Like, oh, he's a sly old dog. He does trancing enchantments. So the dwarf that's following Harry rips his bag because he's like trying to get him. He's holding onto his leg. Harry is utterly embarrassed. And there's this whole group of first years in front of him, including Ginny Weasley, which I love that Harry always notices Ginny. Just like when he was back at the Burrow and she slipped her elbow accidentally in the butter and he was the only one that noticed. So as much as we know that Ginny has a crush on Harry, Harry is starting to have the same effect for Ginny in different ways, just that he's always noticing she's there. And he's embarrassed at the fact that she's able to see this happen.
Right. And I also have to call out here the fact that we still are getting more clues about Ginny. Mm-hmm. This chapter is full of stuff that the author is just telling you. And if you're an engaged reader, you can suss it out. But if you're just reading for the pleasure of it, or if you don't, if you're not thinking, it's just
not
something.
That you're not thinking, because listen, I was an engaged reader the first time I saw it and read it. I was thinking.
Yeah, no, what I mean is like if you're not actively trying to figure out the mystery of it and you're just allowing it to wash over you, that's what I'm saying. You're allowing it to wash over you. You wouldn't think too much about this. But this right here.
Yeah, like if this was a TV show and you and I were doing a podcast about it episode by episode, chapter by chapter, without knowing it. Delve in.
This is what it says. Wonder what Potter's written in this, said Malfoy, who obviously hadn't noticed the year on the cover, and thought he had Harry's own diary. A hush fell over the onlookers. Ginny was staring from the diary to Harry, looking terrified. Mm-hmm. Now, why, if you're reading this, why is Ginny so terrified? Why?
Yeah.
What is the point of her being terrified? And even without knowing the end of the book, even without knowing the twist, you sit there and say, well, it's not necessarily her diary. You don't know that. And even if it was her diary, which it is what she brought to the school, she herself knows there's no writing in it. So what is there to be afraid of?
I think when I first read this, I just took it as she was terrified for Harry, that Harry's belongings were all ripped out, that he was mortified by, you know, having this Valentine sung in front of him. If she, in fact, is the person who sent the singing Valentine to him, she's terrified of, like, everything that's going on because this is not going the well that she thought that it was going to be. But that also that Draco now has Harry's diary.
Yeah.
You know, this is someone that you care for and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, but terrified? Terrified is different than, like, mortified.
Yes.
Like, terrified is sheer terror. You experience terror when someone is breaking into your house and you're in your room alone. That's terror. That is terrifying.
Yes.
That's not mortifying.
Now how am I going to sleep? Thanks, Blake.
Can we also talk about, though, how we can infer that this poem is from Ginny, but not... It's never explicit in the text.
Yeah. It's weird because Malfoy is the one that passes by Ginny and he says, I don't think Potter liked your Valentine much. And Ginny covers her face with her hands and ran into class. So aside from that, like, why do we think it could be Ginny?
Well, we already know that she has some feelings for him. And the fact that it says here, his hair is as dark as a blackboard. I wish he was mine. He's really divine. The hero who conquered the Dark Lord. Listen, that is pretty explicit language in terms of feelings.
Yeah.
I wish he were mine.
Yeah. I don't know if an 11-year-old girl would pen this. That's what I'm saying. Like,
well, they talk about limericks earlier in the chapter, and there's not a coincidence, I think, that this is written, I mean, somewhat in that style.
You know what I do find to be interesting is that she calls Voldemort the Dark Lord. This Valentine calls Voldemort the Dark Lord. And everyone who's in the wizarding world who is not of the dark side of the force,
yeah,
refers to him as he must not be named.
Sure.
Like, you never hear the Weasleys call him the Dark Lord.
Oh,
you never hear his teachers. The Dark Lord is referred to by...
Lucius.
Yeah, Lucius Malfoy, or, you know, anyone who kind of dabbled in that side or was a
Snape.
Death Eater. So I'm wondering if... Snape.
Did Snape send him the Valentine that he wishes he was in?
That would be awesome. Or did Ginny pen it this way because she has been possessed by the Dark Lord, who would love to be called the Dark Lord? Maybe she was writing a Valentine and he was in her brain. He was like, girlfriend, I am not he who must not be named. I am the Dark Lord. You better learn how to rhyme with Lord.
It's a possibility.
There's a possibility.
But either way, I think it still shows the fact that Ginny is overtaken by Voldemort, yet she still retains part of herself. She's still fighting it off.
I mean, she's gotten rid of the book, so she shouldn't be possessed anymore. I'm just saying, I find the word Dark Lord quite interesting.
I find that interesting, too. I find that is a very descriptive word. Mm. Again, if you're reading with intent,
yes,
and you're breaking it down bit by bit, that would suggest that it may not be her, though, because she may have been possessed by him when she wrote it.
True.
Maybe that it is him. And that furthers the conversation here. What kind of sentience does the book have as Tom Riddle's, like, soul, right?
Wow, what?
Right, so is Tom Riddle,
yeah,
the soul of Tom Riddle within the diary?
Yes. A piece of his soul.
Yes.
Yes.
Is his piece of soul aware of what happened with Harry?
Yes.
How is that possible?
Because it's all connected to regular Voldemort. Tom Riddle knows. He admits it, you know, at the end. Like, you're the one person I'm trying to go after. It's been you. That's what I want to do. I don't want to go after Mudbloods. I want you now, buddy.
Because Tom Riddle, as a 16-year-old within the book, is aware of what happened with Harry.
I think he has some of that psychic connection with the regular Voldemort. You know, this is just a piece of Voldemort. So yes, it's living in there. And that's why I think this is the most interesting, aside from Harry, the most interesting of the Horcruxes.
Sure.
Because it gets to act on its own. It does have this knowledge of, like, the previous time frame plus the current time frame. So I just see it as... he knows what's up. Like, I highly doubt Ginny Weasley was like, let me catch you up on the past 50 years.
Well, then here is...
Or did he get it because he was possessing Ginny Weasley and he got all of her knowledge?
Well, then here's the next question. If his soul is in the diary and that has this connection to Voldemort, and Voldemort is aware of Harry being who he is,
yeah,
within the diary because of the connection, why then does Voldemort not know that Harry is a Horcrux? Because that's part of his
soul. He was an accidental Horcrux. So Voldemort made these other Horcruxes. Right. He made the book. He made the, you know, the diadem. He did all these things. He didn't mean to make Harry.
Okay. That makes sense. Well, I mean...
But part of me is wondering, as I said, if maybe just while Tom Riddle possessed Ginny Weasley, if that's how he gained all this knowledge about Harry. I mean, let's be real. She was probably writing in the diary nonstop. Oh my gosh, I love Harry Potter. He's the best. Oh, who's this Harry Potter?
She's writing initials, GP.
That's how I'm going to go with it, that it's all because of Ginny. But speaking of Weasleys,
yep.
Can we have a moment for Percy?
Sure.
Poor Prefect Percy. He gets so much time in this book and not enough time in the movie. Mm-hmm. I just love how he's always, you know, dripped in right here. And, you know, he's always breaking up the fights. He's always in the middle of this stuff. And he tells Malfoy, like, stop it right here. I'm a school prefect. And even though Prefect Percy is right there, that is when Harry does his first Expelliarmus that we get to see. And it's interesting that he does his first Expelliarmus, his most used spell, the one that he's really known for, he does it to retrieve a piece of Voldemort. Mm-hmm. Isn't that wild when you think of it? Like, you wouldn't think that his first time using that would be to kind of like save Voldemort.
To get him. And that, I think, the diary of it all is awesome because it introduces Tom Riddle. And within the writing of a diary, we're already getting a phenomenal picture of Tom Riddle. Not necessarily because of the visual of him later on, or even the experience that Harry has with the book itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because the book is pretty creepy, I think. The book itself is nondescript. It has there's nothing special about it. I feel like the author wants you to overlook the diary. Like, you know, it's important. You know it is, but there's nothing. It reminds me of the cup of the carpenter in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yeah. It's not this big gold. It's not this big ornate thing. It's just this random diary that has a smudged name and a year on it, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of it.
But it's not.
I know. And do you think the author did that purposely to make you think that the diary is important, but it ain't that important?
Well, and I think Harry needs to be alone when he really gets to the bottom of this diary. And I think that that's what's it. He has it with his classmates. He has it in the halls. But he really needs some alone time when he realizes that the ink doesn't penetrate this diary. And when it does, he, of course, begins to have this conversation with Tom Riddle.
Yes.
And it brings him, I love the description of like him bringing the date to his face and then he feels like he's tilting and going inside. So he essentially gets to be a part of the past and just visually see it, where there's a different headmaster and he meets Tom Riddle. And what I found was so interesting is that the author made a point to say that Tom Riddle's hair looked exactly the same shade as Harry's.
Well, and this is what I want to get into, Mary, because the similarities between Harry and Voldemort or Tom Riddle at this point are uncanny.
Correct.
I want to take this leap. I can't wait to take this leap.
Do it.
But there's one thing I have to call up before we get there.
Is it summer holidays?
No, not at all. It is. I love how the author says, oozing back out of the page in his very own ink came the words Harry had never written. Hello, Harry Potter. My name is Tom Riddle. How did you come by my diary? First, the writing for Tom Riddle is exquisite. How did you come by my diary? It
like purrs at you. How did you come by my diary?
Right. It gives you a unique feel. This is not a child writing it. This feels like someone who is a little bit more wise than a child.
Yes.
But there's a specific point here the author makes. It's Harry's very own ink. It's the ink Harry uses to write his identity, which is then fed back to him that it's Tom Riddle.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, I'm Harry Potter. That ink is then translated into, I'm Tom Riddle. That right there already sets the stage.
Yep.
And this is why the characterization of Tom Riddle in this diary is so special. Because not only is he using this kind of language, it's Harry's own stuff. It's Harry's own things. And It continues on. Lucky that I recorded my memories in some more lasting way than ink. But I always knew that there would be those who would not want to this diary read. This, again, we have some more eloquent speech here, but it leads to the next portion, which is, what do you mean? Harry says. I mean that this diary holds the memories of terrible things. Things which were covered up. Things which happened at the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Immediately, we get a sense that Voldemort knows exactly what Harry wants. And this is why I asked you about the sentience of the book and the Horcrux itself. Is Voldemort playing to Harry's curiosity specifically? Is that with purpose? Is that with intent? What do you think?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Because he knows that Harry's a Gryffindor and that Harry's searching for this. Who knows how much Ginny has already told him. But I think, you know, he needs to lure Harry. He needs to gain his trust. But knowing that Harry is a brave Gryffindor, he knows that he would want to find out the answer to this. And he needs to gain his trust by giving him a culprit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I jokingly said, you know, the black hair and the summer holiday. So that's why we see Tom in this headmaster area asking him, can I please stay in Hogwarts for the summer? I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to the Muggle orphanage. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to hear that because Harry most likely does not want to go back to his Muggle family, right, to his terrible aunt and uncle. Like, and that's what Voldemort, aka Tom Riddle, is saying. He's like, it's a terrible place. I don't want to go there, please. And just the chapter before, at Christmas, when the Dursleys sent a toothpick, they asked, can you please stay at Hogwarts for the summer holiday? Sure. So I think it was a really neat mirror.
Absolutely.
That just the chapter before, you know, it's reminding you this Muggle family, which doesn't feel like family, doesn't want you here for the summer, and how Harry would truly probably love to be there for the summer holiday as well.
Right. And not only that, Mary, there are so many more similarities that we get into this antagonist versus protagonist relationship. We've talked about so many times on many different podcasts. The relationship between antagonist and protagonist can be very easily mixed up with a warm, loving relationship, mm-hmm, one that is shared by between two lovers. Now, I'm not suggesting that Harry and whatever, but what I'm saying is the relationship there is, as you said, is a mirror. And Voldemort didn't like the Muggles that he lived with. He felt special. He was an orphan. He looks like Harry. Riddle was a half-blood when he was orphaned. And here's a great example of how these two are really alike.
Mm-hmm.
Riddle didn't trust the headmaster. And when the headmaster was asking him, like, hey, Tom, do you know about this stuff? Like, do you know about the Chamber of Secrets? Riddle lies, straight up lies, and says it the same exact way that Harry lied to Dumbledore.
In that same room.
And it is so special that Harry, who has felt alone more and more and more at Hogwarts, even from his friends, the one bit of comfort that he finally gets happens to be from this diary, which happens to be Tom Riddle, who was lying to him this entire time, making him feel like he's got his back.
Yeah.
It's leading Harry astray. And that is what we're really talking about here. These two are absolutely mirrors for each other. They're doing things for each other. They're making each other, or at least Tom Riddle's making Harry make choices that will alter him specifically and change Harry for the better eventually. And they kind of want the same thing. They kind of want their identity. They want to find themselves.
Yep.
And they want their life. And they're going about it two completely different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I find that so spectacular. And that is why the characterization here is so great, because you can delineate all of that just from this diary.
deep chapter, man.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry.
No, it's. I'm just saying it is such a deep chapter. And then, of course, Tom goes and he stops for a moment at the stairs. And this is what's really cool is that we, as the reader, know Tom Riddle is thinking, okay, I want to stay at Hogwarts. I do not want to go back to the orphanage. I'm the one that opened the Chamber of Secrets. Mm-hmm. But they need to find out who did it to make sure that this school can be safe, or else who even knows? The school itself could be shut down. I can't have that happen. This is my one place of refuge. So he goes and puts the blame on Hagrid. Of course, this is really cool. We get to meet teenage Rubius Hagrid, mm-hmm. who has this pet spider who we later on meet as Aragog. And Hagrid's telling him, like, no, he wouldn't do this. It's not his fault. And luckily, Aragog escapes. I find it quite interesting. So here's the Slytherin who knew the secret of Hagrid. Mm-hmm. And is it because Hagrid was, like, keeping this spider down in the dungeons near the Slytherin rooms? I don't know how this relationship happened between Snape and Voldemort. Hagrid and Voldemort. Yep. And I find it quite interesting that Hagrid isn't more bitter against Voldemort and Tom Riddle.
Well, I think it's just because he's just terrified. Like, I see bitterness, but I still sense real fear.
Like, here's the thing. If you had a run-in with someone terrible and terribly famous, I feel like when that person's name would come up in conversation, you'd be like, yeah, guess what? Guess what he did to me?
Right.
Even if it's, or flip side, if it's someone famous that's good. You know what I mean? Like, if you had dinner and, you know, Mandy Moore sat next to you and was like, oh my gosh, that's Art for Nerds. Love that shirt. You know, anytime someone's like, oh, Mandy Moore, you'd be like, yeah, I can't believe she saw my shirt and liked it. So
kind of like when Carrie Coon was talking to us and she's like, you're the guys who call me Honey Badger?
Yes.
And we were like, oh my God, you know about Honey Badger? Yes. That was in our Leftovers podcast,
yes,
ladies and gents.
Exactly. So it is weird to me that Hagrid never really references, here or really in any of the books, much about his personal interactions with Tom Riddle in school. So I just need to get that off my chest.
One thing I have a question for you on, Mary, is we know that the scene here between Riddle and Hagrid is essentially fabricated. From later on, I think in the book or in the, at least in the movie, we find out that it's somewhat fabricated, because it's purely based on Riddle's memory. It's purely based on his interpretation of events, and he can manipulate that interpretation of events to suit his narrative, right? But as we read this, are we, the reader, supposed to really believe that Hagrid was the one who opened the Chamber of Secrets? I mean, it was, here it is. What's up, said Ron, looking at him with concern. It was Hagrid, Ron. Hagrid opened the Chamber of Secrets 50 years ago. It's not said with questioning. It's not said with tongue in cheek. It's like, no, Hagrid did it. Are we, the reader, supposed to believe this?
So as someone reading it and enjoying it and loving it, and as someone who felt very connected to Harry Potter as I read this, I believed Harry. I also loved it because it kind of made me feel like how I would when I would watch Scooby-Doo. Like, it was, you know, the attendant at the table the entire time. Right, oh, my gosh. You know, like, it's this person who's been right under your nose. And I just kind of thought, you know, we were tricked that way with Quirrell, that it was this teacher. Mm-hmm. And when I first read this, I was, you know, you're questioning the book slightly. But on the flip side, it's this magical world. And you are sitting there reading that thinking, oh my gosh, is it this guy who we've trusted all this time? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's great because it puts these doubts in our minds. And as we move into future books, more people are wrongly accused of major things. So it's just a really interesting conundrum that people get put in. But yes, I do remember being like, no way. But then you quickly find out it's not him.
Gloria here asks on Facebook, was Hagrid even a Slytherin?
Hagrid was a Gryffindor.
He was a Gryffindor. Now, textually, within, I think, the books, it is not specific in the book that Hagrid was a Gryffindor. He only says, he talks about the rest, I think, of the, at least up until this point, he talks about the other houses, but he doesn't specifically say, I was a Gryffindor. Though I know that the author has come out and said, yes, he was in fact a Gryffindor. But I don't think textually it's supported. Like the same way textually, Tom Riddle is not supported as being a Slytherin in this book so far. There's no clue that yet that he is a Slytherin.
Okay.
There's nothing indicating that he is. He's just there. And that's probably on purpose, because if he were a Slytherin, you would already have, you know, because we already have that good versus evil thing between mm-hmm. Gryffindor and Slytherin. Harry the Gryffindor battling with himself, the insecurity of being a Slytherin. Slytherin, of course, equaling that of greed and mm-hmm. insecurity for Harry. If Tom Riddle were to be completely a Slytherin, as it was indicated by this book, I think that would probably be a little too on the nose for the kind of person that he was. So I think the author purposely and smartly keeps that vague.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Because, yeah, we just have it already painted in our heads, good versus bad. I do find it interesting, you know, Tom Riddle was 16, so that means he's in his sixth year. He's a prefect. And Hagrid was expelled in his third year. So, mm-hmm. as I said, Tom Riddle, I wonder, I mean, obviously he was all bad to the bone, so he probably put the sorting hat on his head and he got sorted Slytherin right away. But I'm always amazed at how smart Voldemort, aka Tom Riddle, was. Like, you have to think, this is a 16-year-old boy who didn't want to go home, didn't want right. to go date girls. Like, he was reading all sorts of dark magic. He had the knowledge that a third year in a different house had a secret pet
right.
that he could frame him for. Whereas Harry, like, doesn't even know pretty much anyone outside of his year.
Right. He's just and, walking along.
Yeah, there's not even that many kids at the school, you sure. know? So I find it very interesting when you think about the thirst for knowledge, granted dark knowledge, that mm-hmm. Tom Riddle had.
Yep, absolutely. Anything else you want to say about this chapter, my love?
That is it.
I really liked this chapter, and I don't think it's a coincidence that I, right now with the discovery of the book and Harry engaging with the book or the diary, we're beginning the third act of it, where we're getting to the final part. And my question to you, my final question, I guess, Mary, is we've waited all this long, and finally, we get to some real meat. I mean, up until this point, it's been like, oh, we have this and like this happens and that happens. But third act, finally, we get somewhere. And Harry finally starts to go somewhere with himself. And it's all because of Tom Riddle, which yeah. is leading him down a false path. Do you think the structure of this book is off? Because we waited all this long. It took to the third act to get to something.
But on the flip side, these children have been trying all year to find out.
Yep.
They have been trying and failing and trying and failing. It took, oh, goodness, so long even just for the Polyjuice potion to mm-hmm. be brewed. So, no, I just think that it goes to show you their determination and their persistence.
Sure.
And all the while, there are still fun things that happen at school. Because mm-hmm. let's be real, if Harry went to school and within October all of this went down with Tom Riddle and like bad news, Harry may rethink going back to Hogwarts every year. So I think, you know, we need to have fun while we're there. Harry needs to have fun. And yes, some crazy things happen every once in a while. And that's okay if it happens towards the end. But we get mm-hmm. to go on this journey with him. So no, I don't think that this is how it is. And I will ask you, as a reader of mm-hmm. this series, when you get to book four, to enjoy the ride.
Oh, no, because
book four is an amazing, magical book. But you need to know that this is the magical wizarding world of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And that we are in the Potterverse. We're not in the Voldiverse. Okay. So just because I feel like you like cling to the bits like, oh yeah, we're finally getting to the Voldemort part. We're finally getting to it. And I think what I'm going to ask of you is to enjoy and savor our time at Hogwarts.
Yeah, I think, no, and again, I'm not saying that I disliked all the other stuff, but you know, the first act of this book is stuff. It's things and stuff.
It's Dobby.
Yeah, and the second act of the book is petrification and
Polyjuice
and what is happening.
Yeah.
And then finally we get to something, and like halfway through the book, you know, that's of course that I think that was the the duel, the dueling chapter, I think. That was halfway through the book. I think. I could be wrong. But regardless, or it could have been the Gilderoy Lockhart chapter. Either way, it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is something happens where it finally introduces this mystery, but it's that's the center point of the book. That is the turning point. Though I think I would probably argue that this might be the turning point. Would you the diary?
Why wouldn't it be when there's blood on the wall that says the chamber is open?
Because that is the inciting incident. The turning point is when Harry starts to take comfort in Tom Riddle.
Interesting. Right? I don't really know. I don't really like think about that stuff.
I know, but that's why I'm asking the question. And I'd love to hear what the listeners and everything say.
You're kind of being a drag.
No, I'm not. I'm just asking questions. Victoria asks, is Blake that guy that just wants to get to the finish line and never stops to smell the flowers along the hike?
Yes.
Well, in terms of walking, yes. I need a destination. I need to know where I'm going, when it will end.
Hiking with Blake,
it sucks.
Is the worst.
It is the worst. I'm the worst hiker.
He's like, where's the map? How long is this trail? Where are we going? Is there something that we're going to? And I'm like, Blake, we're going on a hike.
And generally for stories, I love the idea of a story just washing over me. Good. And just letting the author take me where she wants to go. But I just think structurally, it's just an interesting choice.
Good.
It's an interesting choice. Fair?
Yes. And okay. I will tell you that it may be this way for a little while and then it changes.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, okay. All right. You want to do the different perspective, my darling?
Sure.
Actually, it is your turn to do a different perspective.
I didn't know we were even taking turns.
Well, we have been for the past number of episodes.
Oh.
All right. Well, anyway, just wanted to let you know, guys, that the different perspective, it's part of the show, and the show is all thanks to you, the Nerd Clan, and hashtag Nerd Clan. We love you so much. So please, if you find any joy in what we do and any value in what we do, become an official member of our Nerd Clan. Go to jointhenerdclan.com where you get tons of cool benefits like free swag, really cool extra podcast episodes, extra little bits of insider information that happens here at Mary and Blake Media, personal looks at Mary and I, and all really cool bits that everybody else, the official members, you know, that who are not official members do not get. So thank you so much. Go to jointhenerdclan.com. Become an official member. Get tons of extra and awesome benefits. You ready, Marvin?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
I'm Percy Weasley.
Oh, okay. All right, what do you got?
I'm a prefect.
Okay. What's up, Percy?
Listen, I've got a lot of
siblings. You know what, Percy? First of all, you're a little uptight. You're a little uptight.
You shouldn't be out of bed right now.
Okay? I've got a lot of siblings. You know, some of them have already gone on and they're having some interesting careers. My two brothers, the twins, they're nitwits, but they do fine. They do fine in their grades. My little sister, Ginny, oh my gosh, she just started this year. Got sorted in Gryffindor. Couldn't be prouder. And then I've got my brother, Ron. And listen, I have really tried. I've tried with Ron.
Sure.
He's the one that I don't bond with the most. You know,
why is that, Percy? Why do you think?
He just hasn't found his way and I don't think he has any drive. Mm-hmm. You know, he does weird stuff, like really weird stuff. And he's got this weird friend, Harry, who, you know, I know Harry's famous. He, you know, got rid of Voldemort when he was a baby, whatever. Like, neither of them do really well in school. Mm-hmm. And their newest hobby is to hang out in a broken girl's bathroom.
What are we doing there?
My brother. And it stinks. Like, I have to write him up. And then Harry, like, did magic in front of me right when I said, please don't do it. His friend is a bad influence.
Sure.
And I don't know if I should tell my mom, and I hate to say it, but like, I think my sister's kind of got a crush on this Harry kid.
And he might be the heir to Slytherin. I mean, everybody's saying it, right, Percy?
Hey, listen, I don't know if we're going that far. I don't know if we're going that far.
Is he's just the weird kid.
Penelope and I are going to meet in a little bit, and you don't even know what this means, Blake, but I got a girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
I'm a prefect. I get to write people up. Granted, half the time it's my little brother. But life is pretty good.
Is this why you've been sneaking around the halls? And this is why you've been acting
I'm
shady?
I'm snogging all the time.
Oh, my goodness.
I am living
Percy, don't you have better things to do? Like, you got to, like, go. You're an RA, essentially. You got to be watching all this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, life is good right now for me. That's what I'm saying. The only thing that isn't good. Like, I've got a great job.
Yep.
My grades are awesome. Things are lining up for me to work at the Ministry of Magic someday. I've got a really hot girlfriend. The only thing that stinks is my brother because he's playing in toilet water.
And he's friends with the weird kid.
Yeah.
Luckily, though, Percy, he ain't the smelly kid.
He is. He's playing in toilet water. Yeah. The end.
Oh, good one, Mary. Good job. Good job. Good job. All right. You ready for the listener emails?
Yes, I am.
All right. Everybody watching us live, this is your opportunity to get some questions in. I have seen some questions that have already been asked.
I would copy them and repaste them below.
Yes. And make sure that you do it with a lightning bolt emoji. That way we know it is, in fact, a question. And if you are listening to this in the podcast app the day later, fret not, you are okay. You are not alone. You can talk with us via email. Just email your questions about this chapter or next chapter or any chapter that you want to talk about, or if you just want to chat and make fun of us, that'd be cool too. Just email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com and we will include it on the next episode. Marvin, you ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Let's do it.
Oh, Miles here.
All right, so we do have one email, and I have to call this email out because it is a very special email.
Do tell.
This email comes from Amber.
Amber.
Amber says that she loves the Potterverse.
Thank you, Amber.
And what's special about this is that she's only 12.
Oh my gosh, she's the same age as Harry in this book.
That's right. That is right. So she should feel some all kinds of cool stuff from this book. She says she's only 12, but I am a Harry Potter fanatic and a proud Ravenclaw.
Ooh, so she's going to call us out on something wrong.
You know what, Amber? You should be happy about that because you're not a Hufflepuff. I also live in Western Australia, so
rolling
it is very strange to hear and you talk about the COVID situation in America. Yes, trust me, no matter where you are, if it's Australia, it could be New Zealand, it could be Antarctica. COVID is weird, Amber. COVID is really weird. I noticed, though, that you always say occlumency when referring to reading minds, when, Mary, this is actually called legilimency.
Oh, it is! I knew she was going to. I'm like, it's a Ravenclaw letting it be known. They must know something that I'm messing up.
Occlumency is when you block people from reading your mind, Mary. I also really want you to do a different perspective of Ginny Weasley writing in Tom Riddle's diary.
Yeah.
The question for you, Mary, is what do you think you would have happened if Hermione got the diary instead of Ginny? Thanks so much for the podcast, Amber.
Oh, that's a great question. So as I said earlier in this episode, Amber, I think that Tom Riddle learned a lot about Harry Potter because it was Ginny writing in the book. I think that when Lucius Malfoy sent the book into school, it was really to open up the Chamber of Secrets and to destroy all the mudbloods there. As Dobby says, like, it's not necessarily particularly dangerous for Harry, but it's a dangerous place to be, and he doesn't want Harry there. So Lucius isn't sending the book in to kill Harry. He's sending it in so that Voldemort's wish comes true and the mudbloods are gone.
Sure.
So I think that had it been given to Hermione, he probably would be sick and tired about hearing about Gilderoy Lockhart and would be like, whatever, can you please just come to the bathroom and open it?
Yeah,
Lockhart's
just
down there.
Fine.
Bring him if you want.
I'll take care of him too.
Sure.
We'll figure it out.
But he would definitely think about it. If it was Hermione, who is Muggleborn.
Sure.
Ooh, he would have played cat and mouse. Like, I think he would have been really, really bad with Hermione.
In what way? What do you mean?
Because he would have wanted to kill her, or like right away.
Okay.
So I think he would have been absolutely driven sick once he found out that she was Muggleborn.
Yeah, but the problem, though, would be that
he would have her open the chamber
and
make sure that she was his first victim of death.
Got it. Okay, I see what you're saying. I gotcha.
That's what I think.
You know, I think that's a good one. I like that.
Oh.
Like, she would open the chamber and then he would do something to make her.
He would just be like, here's your food, Basilisk. Feast.
Yeah, have some fun.
Nom nom.
Yeah, that would make sense. All right, let's see. Okay, we got a... Let's see if we have any questions here. Okay, Rebecca asks, is the Olaf Harry Potter song happening for us patrons, Mary?
It's coming soon.
It is coming soon. It is coming soon. We are still in the middle of fine-tuning it. We want to make sure it's just right for you guys. Rachel says, does anyone else think that the picture of the dwarf looks like Mr. T in our studio? Yes, in our studio, if you're listening in the podcast app, we have our studio, and above us and behind us is a giant TV screen with what I always put the title chapters and what the photo from the illustrated version.
Yes.
And the photo is of a dwarf holding a bow and arrow with wings and his hair.
It's a Cupid Mr. T.
Yeah, it looks like Mr. T. So yes, it does. let's see.
So good.
Let's see if we have any others. Haley Rode says, who are you guys? I'm in love with everything Harry Potter, and no one told me about you. I'm a Ravenclaw, and I focused my Make-A-Wish around Harry Potter.
Oh, yay, Haley.
Wow, that is excellent.
Thanks,
Haley.
Thanks for joining us.
And I will say this for you, Haley. We have a brand new listener. You're welcome. And welcome to the family.
Let us know how you found us, Haley. That would be awesome.
I imagine that someone probably shared it and she is looking into it now. So yay. Thank you so much for joining our community.
Gloria Costa asks, I don't understand why none of the teachers didn't question how Hermione became a cat.
HIPAA. That's go. It. Madame yeah. Pomfrey is HIPAA compliant.
I also think that Hermione's at an age where she can just say she's going through a change right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's 12. She's just going through a change right now. And all the teachers were like, oh, nope, no questions asked. No questions asked. Anna Ashley says, would you have continued writing in the diary like Harry did? And if so, even knowing what it did, would you have kept it because it was magical?
You see, now that's a real question here. Knowing what it did, does that mean knowing... Like knowing
how it works.
Knowing that it was a Horcrux, knowing that it was evil.
Harry doesn't know that it's a Horcrux or evil or anything.
Yeah, but
like
she
that.
Says, even knowing what it did, would you have kept it because it was magical?
No. I've watched way too many scary movies of things being possessed where I don't want any of that stuff. Give me some basilisk thing and I'm ready to go.
I would say that Harry has a mystery ahead of him and someone's telling him, I know the answer. I know that this was opened, that the Chamber of Secrets was opened 50 years ago, and they never caught him, and they never found out what was doing all this stuff. And that gives Harry purpose. This whole book, he has struggled with his purpose, his identity, doing things on his own, struggling with his friends, and finally this book gives him that. So would I have kept it without knowing that it was a Horcrux, knowing that it was evil? Yeah, I think I would have.
I know you would have.
Because it would have been my release. It would have been that thing.
It would have been a pen pal that isn't in your inner circle.
Right. Right.
And then it's kind of like TV. You can go escape somewhere for a little bit. Or you can go roam the halls.
Our cat has joined us, Lumos, and Rebecca Ann says, cat butt, yes, my day is completed.
That it is. All right, so that wraps up for our listener questions.
Yes, if you have any other questions coming up, get them in now as we start winding this show down.
Yeah.
Mav, do you got anything else to say about this chapter? Anything else that you want to talk about? Final thoughts?
No.
Whatever we got here?
No. I talked a long time.
We did talk a long time. This episode is actually an hour six.
Yeah.
But so we've been... Well, there was a lot to talk about.
There was
a lot to talk about. All right. Let's close this bad boy out, shall we?
Yes.
Let's do it.
As always, sharing is caring. If this podcast brought you joy, please share it with a friend. If all of our listeners shared this podcast with just one friend, text it to them, send it in a Facebook message, or share it on their wall, you would double our listeners.
And here's a prime example. Haley Rode chimes in back on Facebook. She says, I found you guys in a group called Weasley's Whimsical World of Harry Potter. And yay, I'm so excited to be part of the podcast. Well, you're welcome, Haley.
Thank you, Haley.
So there you go. That is proof positive, live time, that if you share, the community will grow. So please do, Haley, right now, share it. Share it to the world, girlfriend.
Share it in another one of your Harry Potter groups if you like. And those of you who are listening and you want to make sure you can join in the live conversation, you can do that simply by texting the phone number 81010 and in the message field, at Elderwand. So at Elderwand in the message field. And the number once again is 81010. That'll get you on our complimentary texting service. And I send you a message to say, guess what? We're going live tonight. Come and join us.
Mary, you want to know something, a little secret?
Yep.
I'm liking this book a lot more than I thought I would.
I knew it would happen. Oh, my name's Mary.
My name's Blake.
Mischief managed.
Most sexual assaults go unreported. At Sarnco, we believe, empower, and advocate for all survivors. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted and needs support, call 844-644-6435. 844-644-6435. At Sarnco, we're here for you.